Welcome back to this podcast series about gout. My name is Mel Brook. I'm the Patient and Public Engagement Programme Director for BIRD. In this episode, we are back with Dr. Tom Williams, a consultant rheumatologist at the Royal National Hospital for Rheumatic Diseases at the RUH in Bath, and we're back on the theme of gout. In this episode, we're going to take a deeper dive into the treatment options and medications available for short-term and long-term control and prevention of future attacks of gout. Tom emphasises how gout is usually very treatable within primary care, to the point where people will no longer experience symptoms. But he also talks about the options for harder to treat gout. Importantly, he also explains how, if gout is left untreated, it could cause much longer term problems and a higher risk of developing or aggravating some quite serious conditions. Before the podcast finishes, we also touch on future medication options on the horizon for patients and for people who do have very hard to treat gout. So let's dive into then the treatment options available to people and how maybe those medications help manage those symptoms, can we?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's probably useful to split the treatments up a little bit into those treatments that we use to treat short term, the acute attacks of the gout.
Yeah.
And then treatments that are more for kind of long term control and prevention of future attacks.
Okay.
So I'll start with sort of the short term treatments first. So I think it's really important here not to forget the basics. So so if you experience an attack of gout, there's really good evidence for using ice. Apply an ice pack with a towel wrapped around it for sort of 10 to 15 minutes at a time every, say, 2 hours, and rest the joint that's been affected. So don't try to keep exercising on it, because that will promote the inflammation even further. Making sure that you've sort of done the basic things. For lots of patients, anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen or naproxen can be really effective and work very quickly. The difficulty is that lots of the risk factors for why people have gout in the first place, like heart disease and kidney disease, mean that those sorts of medications aren't suitable for them. So if you've got any concerns about that, it's worth checking that with your pharmacist or your GP or your rheumatology team. Then other medications that we can use to treat the short-term attacks. So there's a drug called colchicine that some of the listeners may be familiar with. So colchicine, it works slightly differently from conventional anti-inflammatories, but it is essentially to reduce inflammation in the joint that's been affected. We have to be a little bit careful with making sure that we give a dose that's appropriate for your kidney function. So if you've got kidneys that aren't so good, we can usually still use colchicine, but we might have to reduce the dose to reduce the risk of you getting complications from the drug. And the most common side effect of colchicine that's quite unpleasant for people is diarrhea. And that tends to be a dose-dependent reaction. So if you've had more colchicine than your kidneys are able to cope with, your risk of getting that diarrhea is that much greater. So that's why it's really important that we make sure the dose is right for you.
Yeah.
But colchicine is a very effective drug, and actually there's really good evidence that it's safe in people that have heart disease, for example, whereas, you know, often anti-inflammatories aren't, and it may be slightly slower to work than the anti-inflammatory, so it may take 2 or 3 days to kick in and have that effect, but there is good evidence that it shortens the duration of your attack. If either colchicine or anti-inflammatories haven't been effective, or if for whatever reason you can't tolerate them or they're not suitable because of your conditions, the sort of the last resort option is always for steroids. So they can be given in multiple different forms. So there's always tablet steroids. They're sort of fairly easy to administer. There's the option of giving a systemic dose of steroid into a big muscle, like the shoulder muscle, or the buttock. And the benefit of that is you've then just given it as a one-off dose and it kind of slowly gets released into the system. Or if it happens to be an attack of gout in one very easily accessible joint, for example, a knee, the steroids can sometimes be given directly into that joint. So,
right.
so there's a couple of different options there. Difficulty with steroids is, as anybody who's ever taken them will know, there's lots of side effects that come with them, both short and long term. And there's lots of places you can read up about those, but they're not very pleasant. So short term, they can increase your appetite, disturb your sleep, affect your mood, and then longer term, weight gain, osteoporosis, diabetes, infection risk, cardiovascular risk, etc. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that whenever we use steroids, that we think very carefully about the potential benefits they give us versus the disadvantages. Mm. So that's really what the sorts of medications that we use to treat the short-term attacks. And then the next group of medications that's worth looking at and treatments are the ones that prevent your future attacks and improve your long-term outcomes.
Yeah.
And I think, again, here it's really important to think about the risk factors and if there's anything that we can do to modify your risk factors. So again, UK Gout Society website, really useful resource for that. Looking at whether there's anything that we can do to help you with your body weight, because that's an important risk factor. Mm. And then whether, for example, some people that have high blood pressure will be on certain medications for that, whether they can be tweaked to give you things that are more so gout friendly, if you like. So there's a drug called Losartan that lots of people will be on to treat their blood pressure. That's actually quite good in terms of reducing your uric acid levels. And so it's quite a gout friendly drug. Whereas there's another blood pressure drug called bendroflumethiazide, which is a diuretic, a water tablet that increases your uric acid levels. So, so your GP will often want to look at some of those sorts of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have medications that can actually directly lower your uric acid levels in your blood. And the way that most of those drugs work is by reducing your body's production of uric acid. Mm. And the drug that we've had for the longest and is used most commonly is a drug called allopurinol. Now, allopurinol is a really, really good drug, and it has the potential, as I say, to cure your gout if used properly. It's a drug that historically we've kind of reserved for kind of special cases of gout. So those with repeated attacks or those with evidence that they're getting damage as a result of their gout. But there's increasing evidence that actually we should be much more proactive than that. And because of the other health risks that come with poorly controlled gout, we should perhaps be looking to start those drugs a bit earlier.
Right.
And at least offering the option of going on to preventative treatment for anybody that suffers with gout, regardless of how frequently they get the attacks.
Mm.
So allopurinol is a long-term daily medication. So it's not something that you kind of switch on and off depending on whether you get the attacks. Again, it's really important here that the dose is appropriate for you and your level of kidney function. Mm. And any GPs that are out there listening, the BSR gout guideline has got a really neat table that suggests the starting dose of allopurinol according to kidney function. And that's something that I reference all the time when I'm starting the drug in secondary care. So the problem with allopurinol is a very small percentage of people are ultra sensitive to it and can get a very nasty reaction called allopurinol hypersensitivity syndrome, where they come out in a very florid rash and they feel really unwell, sort of flea-like right. with it. That affects only a tiny minority, but it can happen. So it's worth being aware of that. And if you start the drug and you develop those symptoms, please stop taking it and seek urgent medical attention.
Mm.
That's also partly why we tend to start with a fairly low dose. And so because we're starting with a low dose, it has to be built up very gradually over a period of time until you've got the blood uric acid level down to an acceptable level. And the target is usually to get that below 300. And what often I find in secondary care is that patients have been started on allopurinol maybe at 100 milligrams a day, and then nobody's ever reviewed the dose of it afterwards. And so people continue to get the attacks.
Yeah.
So that's one of the sort of hints I'd give you, is if you started on that drug, do you ask your general practitioner, or if you're under rheumatology, your rheumatology team, you know, what's happening in terms of the monitoring and the follow-up, and how is that dose going to be escalated over the coming weeks and months?
Mm.
The other issue that can happen with allopurinol And this is a difficult one for me to explain to patients when it happens. But initially, your risk of getting a gout attack actually goes up when you start allopurinol.
Right.
And that often puts people off the drug forever. So they think, well, goodness, I started this drug and my gout was worse than it had ever been before. And it's quite hard then to convince them to go back onto it for completely understandable reasons.
Mm.
There is a technical reason for that. It's to do with what happens to your uric acid as it kind of rapidly comes out of your system initially before that the rate of decline sort of levels off. But in terms of what you need to know, the important thing is that if you start on allopurinol, until we've got the drug at a sort of steady dose that we know is right for controlling your uric acid levels, ideally you should be taking something alongside it to reduce the risk of a flare-up. So whether it's low dose of anti-inflammatory or a low dose of colchicine, or in a few rare cases, a low dose of steroid to sort of keep those attacks at bay until we've got the allopurinol to the right level in your system to control things long-term.
Okay.
So those are some of the key sort of hints and tips I'd give about allopurinol, which is probably the most commonly used drug long term and where often things go wrong. And often those are the sorts of patients that get referred into rheumatology are ones where actually, had we just taken a little bit more care of some of those finer details, that, you know, the complications may not have happened in the first place. There is an alternative drug from the same family as allopurinol that some people listening might be taking called febuxostat. So so it works in a very similar way. We haven't got the same dosing range with febuxostat as we have with allopurinol. So the allopurinol dose will range from anything up to a very low dose of 50 milligrams, which, you know, might be taken every day or every other day or even less frequently in people with very bad kidney function, all the way up to 900 milligrams a day in a small number of patients that need that much to control their gout. And we've got the whole range in between. So that allows us to really kind of tinker and adjust things until we've got it at the right level for you. For Buxostat, we haven't got that dose range. So it's either 80 milligrams a day or 120 milligrams a day. And I'd say the biggest difference between the two is that risk of the gout flaring up after starting it is much higher in the febuxostat than it is in the allopurinol. So if you've had that experience with allopurinol, switching to febuxostat isn't necessarily the best idea. And it's quite often something that happens. You know, people say, oh, well, I can't take this allopurinol, and they get given the febuxostat instead. And then they get an even worse flare-up of the gout. Whereas what's needed is to take that colchicine or that ibuprofen alongside it to head that risk off. There's one other issue that people need to be aware of with febuxostat as well, is that we will tend to avoid prescribing it in people with more severe heart disease. So if you've got quite bad heart failure, or you've had sort of lots of heart attacks and stents and things in the past, there is a caution that we should tend to avoid febuxostat in those patients. And the reason for that is that there was a head-to-head trial done comparing those outcomes in people on febuxostat versus allopurinol. And they found that there were more major cardiovascular events in the group of patients taking febuxostat. We don't actually know whether the febuxostat was causing any harm there, or whether it's actually that the allopurinol is protective against those events.
Yeah.
So that's a lot harder to disentangle. But because we saw that in the trial, there is guidance out there for doctors to, in those groups of patients, generally avoid febuxostat. So that's worth knowing about, because obviously patients with heart disease very often have gout as well. So it does slightly limit the group of patients that we can use that drug in.
So that's based on current evidence, and it's important to mention at this point that, you know, these kinds of things are continue to be researched, and that picture could change in future. But as soon as they see a risk like that, or potential risk like that, they would recommend certain treatment prescribing methods, wouldn't they, and mechanisms and things.
Absolutely. We see this with lots of drugs where analyses happen in trials where they try to identify safety events, and it's hard to know whether a drug has caused the safety event, caused a harm, or whether it's the thing they're comparing it to was beneficial. Because there isn't a perfect way of controlling that. The authorities that license drugs tend to err on the side of caution for completely understandable reasons. But it's just something to be aware of. So those drugs can both be prescribed by GPs, by the way. So all of that can be done in primary care.
So can I ask a question, just to jump in there and say, we mentioned about
perhaps having a slightly more of a flare up when you start either of these drugs. Is there a window you can put on that? What people could expect? Like, you know, how long to give it before they know?
Yeah. So there's no hard and fast answer to it. The further you are away from when you started the drug, the less that risk is. So as I say, what happens is that initially when you start the drug is when most of the reduction in the uric acid happens. So as your kidneys are trying to clear that very, very quickly from the system, that's the period in which you're at the most risk of getting one of these flare-ups. Mm. But then once it kind of levels itself out a little bit more and the reduction's a bit more steady, that diminishes. And what I'd say really is that it's worth staying on some form of preventative treatment until we've seen that your uric acid levels, when we're monitoring for, you know, for getting the dosing of the allopurinol right, once we've seen that they're starting to level off a bit and that we've got you onto a steady dose of allopurinol that we're not having to change very frequently, then that risk is much less and you can probably come off your preventative treatment then.
Right.
So, yeah, as I say, for most people, those drugs that I've already mentioned there, which can all be prescribed in primary care, are more than enough to control the gout as long as the monitoring is done properly.
Mm-hmm.
There is a small number of people where either they can't have those medications because they don't agree with them or there's some issue with their other medical conditions that mean they're not suitable, or with that they're not sufficient to control things despite everything having been done properly with getting the dosing right and so on. And that's definitely a reason for a patient to be referred on to rheumatology, because there are a small number of other drugs that we can prescribe alongside those drugs to help. And those drugs are actually slightly different. They tend to look more at how we can help clear the uric acid out of your system. We very rarely need to use them, actually. So even the majority of people that are referred on to us, which is a minority of the gout population, we can usually get control of it if we use the conventional drugs properly. But there are a tiny number that need actually more old-fashioned drugs like benzbromarone that actually help the kidneys to clear the uric acid out of your system.
Okay. So it sounds like there's several approaches to this from top down, which is the basic kind of first aid to manage the symptoms, and then maybe some like over-the-counter things that you could try working up to the need for a medication that helps your body flush the uric acid out on a more consistent basis, and some options for people who that maybe is not enough for. So it's good to have a full range and an in-depth understanding of that. So thanks for that, Tom. So Tom, you talked about earlier about how important it is to get gout under control because it could potentially lead to other risks. So can we kind of just delve into that a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. So sort of the risks that kind of are directly related to the gout. So people with really badly controlled gout, it can go from being a sort of episodic flare up where you get an episode of pain and swelling in one joint and then it settles down. And then a few months later, it comes back in another joint. Instead of that, it can develop into more of a sort of chronic arthritis and can affect multiple joints. So that obviously has a huge impact then on people's quality of life and level of function and so on. Actually, if it's very badly controlled, then the gout can actually lead to erosions in some of those joints, and then that obviously can't be reversed with medical treatment. So that can cause sort of long-term damage to the joints themselves. A percentage of people with very badly controlled gout can develop something called uric acid kidney stones. So most normal kidney stones that some people are unfortunate enough to experience are made of very different chemicals, but a tiny proportion have these uric acid kidney stones. And it goes without saying that that's A, extremely painful, but B, increases risk of things like infections and kidney impairment as well if you suffer with that. And I'd say certainly, you know, patients with those things that I've mentioned there, so either erosions that we can see on an x-ray, or I've got tophi, which are those hard sort of lumps caused by poorly controlled gout, or have kidney stones caused by uric acid, should definitely be on long-term treatment. As I say, long-term treatment should be considered in everybody with gout. Some people may choose not to have it, but if you have those things, I would strongly encourage you to have long-term treatment to prevent the gout. Then there are sort of more the indirect consequences as well. So people with poorly controlled gout, as I said earlier, are more likely to have things like heart attacks and strokes. So that's obviously really important. and generally will have poorer kidney function as well, and with all the risks that come with that. So as I say, you know, gout is something that is miserable for people to live with, and it's really important in and of itself that it gets treated properly. But even if you're somebody who's extremely stoical and willing to put up with it for your long-term health, it is also really important that you get your gout properly treated.
Mm. And there's no need, is there? There's no need to
be treatable. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is good news for anyone who has been suffering with gout.
I mean, I have to say, it probably treating people with gout well is one of the aspects of my job that gives me the greatest job satisfaction, because we can make such a difference with actually pretty straightforward and fairly inexpensive medication. It's just, you know, making sure that we've addressed all of these different aspects of it properly, and that the monitoring is done properly, and that we've escalated the treatment to what that individual needs, and, you know, and addressed any misconceptions that come around that's the bit that's difficult and takes time. The drugs themselves are actually quite straightforward to use. And it's a shame that there's still so many people out there suffering with it, when actually we've got the tools that we need to treat this.
Yeah, I can understand that. It would be a lovely moment to know that you've treated someone effectively. But, you know, I'd encourage anyone listening to this who's doubting whether or not their gout is well controlled or have kind of given up to go back and visit one of their healthcare providers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorted. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Tom. So we always ask the question before we kind of do some summing up of our key messages, do you know, is there any ongoing research or anything else? Is it not needed? I mean, is it really just evaluating what's out there and trying to find better versions of some of the drugs for the harder to treat gout?
Yeah, the honest truth is that there are some newer treatments on the horizon that are extremely expensive. There's one called lesinurad, I think is the name for it. And there's another drug to treat the acute attacks called canakinumab. These are sort of more expensive specialist biologic drugs.
Well, they sound like biologics, yeah.
Yeah, there's a need for them, because there is a tiny minority where, for whatever reason, we can't use the conventional treatments. But the message I would give to anybody listening is that for the vast majority of people, the conventional treatments that we've got will work, and you will tolerate them well as long as we dose them appropriately. And things tend to go wrong when we don't.
And there's good evidence for this as well. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it comes from a place of confidence. Brilliant, Tom. Thank you. So what we've covered today, we've covered what gout is, what symptoms, how they present, people will experience. And then we've run through all of the treatments, from the very simple self-treatment through to the ability to treat something that's a bit more stubborn. And the really good news to come out of all of this is that it is treatable, and we can't emphasize that enough, really.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think if I had to kind of sum up what I've tried to describe here, number one thing is that this is a serious condition, and we need to treat it seriously.
Yeah.
And if you're somebody who's suffering with it and you haven't sought medical attention, please do so, because we can help. The second thing is that if we manage this properly and with the right level of attention to detail, we can get this condition fully under control. The bits that are challenging are around making sure that the drugs that we prescribe are suitable for your kidney function, and that somebody is monitoring the effect of the treatment to make sure that the dosing is right for you and will get the condition under control. That's the bit that I often find tends to not be done so well, both in primary and secondary care. So I think if you as a patient know that, it empowers you to be proactive in speaking to your healthcare providers in making sure that happens.
Absolutely. No, that's a really good message to put out there. And we've talked about some places where people can find more information, some of the websites. We can put some of those in the show notes. Is there anything else that we could mention at this point?
Yeah. So as I've mentioned earlier, strongly encourage the UK Gout Society website, particularly for some of the lifestyle and dietary implications of the condition. And as always, Versus Arthritis, really good, reputable source of information regarding gout. And I'd strongly encourage you to visit that. And again, if you've got other questions, then your GP or your rheumatology team should be well placed to be able to answer them.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you, Tom. It's been great to have you here to talk us through all of this today and to help us understand more about gout and the treatments that are available. We really appreciate it. Thank you. And do come back and do another podcast with us.
Thank you, Mel.
Thank you. We're really grateful to Tom for talking us through all things gout over these last two episodes. We hope that this has given you information you need to either ask the questions to your doctors, self-manage a little at home, and feel more informed about gout. Don't forget to check the show notes for some additional sources of useful information and support. BIRD are committed to helping patients increase knowledge about rheumatic conditions because we know this can have a really positive impact on living with them. We also have a great focus on enabling people to get involved in rheumatology research to help make sure that new medications and treatments meet the needs of patients. We couldn't do any of this without the help of our volunteers and the support of our donors and sponsors, all of whom we are immensely grateful to. You can sign up to be notified about all our podcasts and our patient engagement research opportunities by joining our mailing list. Just send an email to admin@birdbath.org.uk. The address and links are in the show notes.